We are also joined on the line right now by our guest for today. He is a man who does know all things about Major League Soccer and about US soccer in general, but he's also a man who is far more at home in the Northeast, covering Sunderland and Newcastle and the Premier League. And of course, we're going to talk to him today about a little bit of England as well. Joining me on the show right now, right here, is Mr. Kristen Hennage to talk to us about all things Gus Poyet and all things England. Kristen, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show, mate. Always love it when you come and join us, especially on a Friday. How are you doing today, man?
I'm good. The weather is terrible up in Newcastle, but I'm good.
I tell you what, it's terrible down south here as well, mate. So I wouldn't worry about that. Your Newcastle weather has filtered its way down to us, unfortunately, here in the south. So I'm looking forward to a dingy weekend being warmed up by the international football coming up tonight, this evening. England taking on Montenegro at Wembley. Still tickets on sale. Are you surprised these big games against Poland and Montenegro, there are still tickets on sale? Because you would have thought this is, of all the crunch games that we've seen for England, these are two huge games that almost take us back to 1994 and Graham Taylor's failure to get us to a World Cup.
Yeah, it's a massive game for England and for Montenegro. The cost, I think, is perhaps an issue. You have to try and look at the socioeconomic factors on this, I think, and that people perhaps don't have as much money as normal. And it's going to be on television, which, again, diminishes perhaps the desire to head out on a dreary Friday night and try and get across to Wembley.
Oh, no. Surely the best place to be on a dreary Friday night is a couple of pints and a couple of mates down at a football ground somewhere in the UK. There will, of course, be a lot of expectation on England tonight. And we'll briefly discuss England's chances this evening against Montenegro before we get into all things Gus Poyet and his appointment. Hodgson said that he wants the side to go out and play fancy football, if you will. He wants them to go out and play football rather than the disappointing performance that we saw against the Ukraine in their last outing that got slammed by people here in the UK. Do you think we will see England come out? Obviously, there's not as many injury problems as the last outing for the national team.
I think you have little choice in that instance, because at least with the Ukraine game, you can contextualise it and say, well, it was away from home. Ukraine, a very good side at home, very difficult to beat. And you entered that knowing what you wanted. You wanted a draw so that you could move forward and target this game against Montenegro as the one that you wanted to win. So he's done the first part, and it's kind of like, you know, promising to do your chores after you've been out to play. Now you have to do the difficult bit, I would argue, and come out and play a Montenegro side who I think have more than enough motivation for this game. This is a country of, I think, 600,000 people, give or take. That's half the size of Trinidad and Tobago, who at present are the smallest nation to ever be in a World Cup. So if you can imagine what that potentially means for Montenegro in terms of getting to this competition and then not just etching themselves in history, but forging an early part of their own personal identity following their break from Serbia, you could argue there are more motivations for Montenegro to get this done tonight than there are England.
For England, in this attacking lineup, we've been a lot of talk about Daniel Sturridge and his inexperience with England. But do you think, on his current form in the Premier League at the moment, is it impossible for Hodgson to ignore playing Sturridge and to give him that starting frontman role?
Well, I don't think Michael Owen was terribly experienced when he burst past those Argentinian defenders in World Cup 98, was he? Would he have done that perhaps more efficiently if he'd been more experienced? I think it's something of a misnomer sometimes that you need that experience. I can see why he's looking for it in his goalkeeper, because, again, that's a position that very much defines the game, because if you fail as a goalkeeper, there's a strong chance you've let a goal in, whereas a midfielder can make a mistake or a striker can. I think Hodgson touched on that at the weekend, and I completely agree with him. But for Daniel Sturridge, a man who, you know, I caught a couple of weeks ago in Sunderland, he's in good form, he's confident, and I think he's got some wonderful assets, not just his dribbling and his pace, but just his brain and his movement. He's very clever, and I think that in games like this where it's going to not just be tight, but it's going to be a case of Montenegro wanting to be stern and be stable and strong from the back, it's brilliant if you can call upon a player who can be that sort of spontaneous with his play and give you that extra little something that perhaps other players can't.
You mentioned Joe Hart there, Christian, and do you get the feeling that he's playing for his England job in these games, especially if there's a mistake tonight that proves costly for England? Is his role going to be up for grabs against Poland, do you think? How much pressure's on him going in?
Well, I think you could very easily try and draw comparisons to Paul Robinson in Croatia all those years ago with the rather unfortunate pitch bubble. That was very much the beginning of the end for him at England. I don't see the same for Hart. I think he's just in bad form. I personally was never that sold on Robinson. He was good, but I felt like he had already hit his peak at the age he was at then. With Hart, I think there's still a lot more to come. I think he's just, as you say, in bad form. And the problem is, for a goalkeeper, when you're in bad form, there's no real place to hide, because, like we just said there, if you make a mistake, in Hart's case against, you know, Munich, for example, the fact that his wrists weren't very strong, then it's going to show up on the goals column. And that's a really unfortunate thing, but it's also, you know, the life of a goalkeeper. You live and die by those successes or failures. I think that this will be an amazing test of his character. And in some ways, if he fails miserably, then it's unfortunate for him, but then you know where you stand with him and you know what you can expect from him and what level he's at. Equally, if he passes it with flying colours and produces some wonderful saves, then he's had a great opportunity to fortify himself. You have to give these players the chance to really define themselves. You can't... In many ways, I'm pleased that Hodgson hasn't tried to cover him away and bring someone else in, because I think this is a moment for Joe Hart to earn himself redemption.
The pressure's all on him. The pressure, of course, on England in general in these next two games. Christian, let's be blunt with this. With the Montenegro side, with a lot to prove, with spatterings of high-quality talent in their side, do England get the job done tonight nice and securely? Are we going to be on panic stations for the whole 90 minutes? Or is it going to be even worse? Are Montenegro going to get a result at Wembley?
I think England are always on panic stations, winning or losing. that's just the mentality of English football at present, unfortunately. I think they'll win, though. And that's not a slant on Montenegro. They've got some wonderful talent, not even just up front with Vucinic and Jovetic. You go back through that team, there's some very good players in there. Savic, who I think has really fixed his career since leaving Manchester City. And you would think, yeah, that, you know, just because there aren't a great deal of players at clubs perhaps near the top of Europe's game, then it should be easy. I don't think it will, but I think they'll get it done because people are expecting them to slip up. It's kind of a weird paradigm with England that when you expect them to fall backwards and stumble the most is often when they perform and often when they bring something out, like the European Championships against Sweden. I think we all expected a draw at best, and yet they pull out a performance like they did. And I think that's just the Jekyll and Hyde beast that is English football.
It's a big game for England tonight, but there's also been some big news coming out of your neck of the woods, Christian, this week. Obviously, Sunderland getting rid of Paolo Di Canio what seems like months ago, but of course only a week or so ago. Gustavo Poyet has been appointed this week as the new Sunderland manager. We spoke a little bit about him. Have you had any change of thoughts, though, since our last discussion about Gustavo Poyet coming in and taking the reins at Sunderland? What's your initial impression?
I think he's the best option that they had. René Mullenstein was another one who was mentioned, because obviously Di Matteo ruled himself out quite early. The problem with Mullenstein was he had a brief spell at Bromby, and by all accounts he was slightly eccentric, shall we say. He repainted the tunnel from Bromby's yellow to green because he thought it would calm the players down as they walked out. He famously gave them a team talk during a half-time of Europa League game against Frankfurt, in which he asked them to pick an animal. And it was, again, it was all very surreal kind of stuff that one of his former players had written about in a book that he'd written after his career. And it didn't really paint him as the best potential manager they could find. Poyet doesn't really have that. I mean, he's been compared to Di Canio for obvious reasons. He's 45, same age as Di Canio. He's coming from the lower leagues, having won a title. Admittedly, his was League One, Di Canio's was League Two. I think the fact that he said very early on, don't compare me, is because he realises how strong the comparison is. I think that really it's just a superficial one. If you look at the two as individuals, the only detractor that Poyet has at present is Vicente, the old Valencia winger. And he called him egotistical and said that he would laugh if you missed a shot in training and that's not how you behave as a manager. I think that really you have to give that situation some context and say that Vicente had been at Brighton for 2 years, hadn't played a lot because of injury, and thus was released. And I think to a degree there was an element of bitterness in his assessment of Poirier. The players that he's played for all seem to speak quite highly of him, bar that one instance. In fact, Steve Harper, the old Newcastle goalkeeper, has been incredibly glowing about him and his man management and thinking that he won't be fazed by the goldfish bowl or the pressure cooker that is North East football, especially given he's got to face Newcastle in his second game, which is incredibly difficult place to put him in, knowing that they need points as well, irrespective of the fact that it's actually at the Stadium of Light. And I think tactically he's more evolved than Di Canio. Di Canio was very simple. He wanted to just play 4-4-2 and be quite direct with it. Not long, but direct in terms of getting it from front to back. Di Canio is a bit more patient, a bit more evolved. The only problem I would perhaps pin on him, and it's one that Di Canio had as well, was that he's quite stubborn in terms of that 4-3-3 is his plan. And he was often criticised at Brighton for the fact he wouldn't adapt, he wouldn't change, that he just was so strict to the mantra of keeping it on the ground, passing the ball, and that was it. And for 2 years just over, they didn't win a game after falling behind. Yet you flip that on its head and say, well, they also never lost a game under him when they took the lead. The problem is, at present, Sunderland have only taken the lead twice this season in their seven games. So you have to perhaps think, well, there's going to need to be minute changes. The blessing comes in the fact that Poirier's actually said that, you know, it's going to be about getting points first, and then we'll try and ingrain our philosophy into this side. So he's showing, I would argue, a more understanding of the situation than Di Canio did.
Now, talking of understanding, that's a tenuous link, but I'm going to use it, Kristen. A lot of the talk about the communication in the dressing room and the difficulties there's been, I mean, that's going to be a real challenge for Poirier. But considering, obviously, born in Uruguay, he's played at Chelsea and Tottenham, where there have been numerous different nationalities in dressing rooms, do you think he comes in more prepared for this sort of situation, for the multilingual, for communicating to players that can't communicate with themselves at the moment?
I think he does. Di Canio spoke Italian and English. His English was a little bit like Trapattoni's. It was very fast and full of more words than it needed, but it was understandable. Poirier speaks very good English. He spent time in France very early in his career before going back to River Plate in Uruguay, and thus speaks French. He also speaks Italian, English, and Spanish. He did joke that he speaks a little bit of English too, but the fact that he speaks those languages makes it easier, and he doesn't think it'll be a problem. Now, as we mentioned before, Di Canio's talked about how there was a huge problem for him trying to explain even just the most basic of terms to his players in English, and they had to be condensed from squeeze up to just up. The fact that Poirier speaks four languages makes it so much easier for him to converse and explain what he wants while these players learn English. The only issue I would perhaps put forward is it's not going to change on the pitch, because just because he speaks the language doesn't mean that his players now all do. So it's how they communicate will perhaps be interesting to watch. I'm not sure what he's going to do. Perhaps he'll get them all to learn bits of each other's language and whatever fits best. But he'll be able to vault the obstacle to a degree, but unfortunately for Sunderland, it's going to take time for it to stop being an issue.
Surely they can all learn, push out in Italian, Spanish, English and French. Surely that would be possible at Sunderland, but who knows how they will deal with the communication problems on the pitch. What about the mystery that surrounds, obviously, there's been plenty of rumours about why Poirier ended up falling out and leaving, being sacked from Brighton and Hove Albion. Does that create any mystery and therefore an element, not of, I don't want to say mistrust, but a little bit of extra kind of thrown into the mix of a new manager coming into a side with the rumours that we've heard as well, the players, will there be a slight kind of adjustment period, maybe a little longer because of this?
Well, I think the situation at Brighton was, again, the details will never be fully known, unfortunately. The outcome of that tribunal is still to be decided, and whether he's going to push ahead with it. From what I can ascertain, though, whenever he was linked with a better job, he was more than happy to discuss it. I don't think that's the most respectful way to go about things, but that's the way he chose to do it. Now, the club's chairman, a chap named Tony Bloom, said that after he had left, he actually asked to leave before the playoff game against Crystal Palace that kind of lost and really not only presented a microcosm of his failings, but was the tipping point. It had kind of hit its crescendo. I think his ambitions and Brighton's ability to match them were no longer parallel. It wasn't the most, how should we put it, the most civil of departures from a football club ever. It was quite acrimonious. And the fact that he learnt about it live on BBC television while being a pundit, I imagine, didn't help that situation at all. But I don't think it will carry over. I think that, again, these players don't want relegation on their resume come the end of the season or come the end of the year. You've got Giaccarini, who, again, is trying to keep his mind on Italy's World Cup campaign. Jozy Altidore, another player who's obviously trying to keep his mind on his international prospects along with a few others. So they want to have as good a season as possible just to give them that momentum going into Brazil. And so, again, it's not really the time to sit and question, well, you know, why was he sacked? What kind of guy is he? You just have to ignore all that. It's very much, I guess, like starting a new relationship. You have to kind of ignore the previous and just focus on what's in front of you. And in this case, it's a good young manager who wants to play football in a way that I think is conducive to the talents that he has at present. And really, he's going to be the guy, the only person right now who's going to help them try and get out of the situation that they're in.
It's going to be a big uphill task for Gus Poyet at Sunderland. A disappointing start to their season and a disappointing time under Paolo Di Canio. Poyet coming in, many people saying that he's just like Di Canio, but we will live to see that come the end of the season. Kristen, before I let you go, I've got to ask you one thing about Major League Soccer here, because I know you're a man of world football and take a vested interest in the US game. Portland's loss on Wednesday night, we're going to touch on it later on in the show, but do you worry that this is a sign, Seattle's loss even, do you worry that this is a sign from Seattle that when playoffs come, they're still going to be stumbling on the big occasion? Because that was a chance for them to book their place in the Major League Soccer playoffs against a fellow Cascadia Cup rival.
Yeah, that and the game against Colorado weren't exactly the best situations for them to present their title credentials, really. I think, yeah, that it's a mental inhibition. You look at the goals, as brilliant as Kakuta Mana was the other night in taking those finishes, from a defensive standpoint, if you're analysing that with the Pro Zone guys the next day, you're really not pleased with that. John Kennedy, Hurtado in particular, was just very naive. You know, for Mana's second, following the ball like that and leaving such a, you know, gulf in the middle of the pitch. But then also you have to, you know, question Yedlin for not cutting across and giving him the kind of cover that you expect from your fullback. It's little mistakes that I think are often born out of that pressure that you talk about. I watched the game and I remember, you know, early on, Ross Fletcher explaining how pivotal this game was, that they could book their playoff place, that they could do so many great things, the Cascadia Cup, as you mentioned. And I think when that was such the focus and there was very little given to the threat that Vancouver, present, and how brilliant at times they've been this season themselves, very, you know, unstable and very inconsistent, you had to worry a little bit, because there was just every chance that when you framed the game like that, Vancouver were going to show up and spoil the party, and they most certainly did that.
They really did for the Seattle Sounders. Kristen, we will have to talk with you about Major League Soccer a little more as we continue through to the playoffs, and a big thanks for you to joining us here on WFD today to talk about all things England, all things Sunderland and Gus Poyet, and a tad bit of MLS as well, mate. We always enjoy your time.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Mr. Kristen Hennage joining us here on World Football Daily, discussing the ins and outs of England's big game against Montenegro this evening at Wembley. It's a massive night of football in general across the board. And Kristen giving us the heads up on Roy Hodgson and his thoughts on how England are going to approach this one, how they're going to do. And also having a look at Gus Poyet. What a big opportunity for him. Premier League managerial job, what a tough task he's got ahead of him as well. And I tell you what, those stories surrounding Poyet's exit from Brighton are always going to